Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hi, folks. I'm Lynn, and I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And I'm here with my co-hosts, Bobby Neer, Robert, and Dave. Hello, guys.
Hey.
And I'm so glad that Robert got some of his technical glitches fixed up now. This is just terrific. Oh, yay.
I'm trying to get through this game here. I just bought this game called The Grave, you know, kind of based on the Clue game. Let's see. I moved this over here. I'm going to guess Penta Sykes in the cemetery with a knife. I'll have to finish the rest of it later here.
Great. Well, I am just so glad that everybody's here and all the technical glitches are strained out. Hey!
Huzzah.
Hey, so Davy Jones, he died a few days ago.
Very sad
indeed. Only 66 years old. You know, very, very, very sad. He seemed to be the picture of health. Did everybody think that? I mean, the guy looked great, didn't he? And he certainly kept up that youthful look of his. So I guess you never know.
You just look better than Dick Clark does now.
Yeah.
Dick Clark's still alive.
And Dick Clark's still alive. He's still, you know, like, even though he could barely speak anymore. I mean, he looks terrific. But Davy Jones, my God, you see pictures of him. He was 66, and he looked great. I would never have thought that. Well,
now, see, Dick Clark is the puppet of Ryan Seacrest. Don't you know that? You know, you ever watch Ventriloquist?
You know what? I'll agree with you on that. I will agree with you. But, oh, well. You know, what we got? We got Whitney Houston. We got Davy Jones. We got the writer recently. One after another. They come in threes. Come in threes. I'll always believe that. Oh, Felix, I'm glad you're back, too. Felix said it's great to be back. And he likes Lee Marvin's acting. After Burgess Meredith, he likes Lee Marvin's acting the best. Well, we appreciate that because I think Lee Marvin's pretty terrific too. Well, today's episode is titled The Grave, and I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Normally, the old man would be correct. This would be the end of the story. We've had the traditional shootout on the street, and the bad man will soon be dead. But some men of legend and folktale have been known to continue having their way even after death. The outlaw and killer Pinto Sykes was such a person. And shortly we'll see how he introduces the town and a man named Connie Miller, in particular, to the Twilight Zone.
Thanks, Robert, for that clip. And The Grave. Well, it's mainly about two men. One is named, of course, Pinto Sykes. And you barely catch even a glimpse of him in the beginning of the episode. He's just walking out of a building, and he's shot down. You don't even get to see his face. I don't think anyone saw his face. But then, of course, you have the other man, who's the main person here, and that is Connie Miller. And Connie Miller is the gunman who was hired by the townspeople to kill Pinto Sykes. But unfortunately, after chasing him from town to town for a long time, a group of townsmen got together, and they shot him dead as he walked out into the street. You know, you chase somebody for months, years, whatever, and then the guy walks out of the street, and the town's got people kill him. Anyway, Connie Miller, he walks into the local saloon, and he's informed of Pinto's murder. And the man who spoke to Pinto on his deathbed told Connie how Pinto swore to reach up and grab him if he ever dared to visit his grave. Now, of course, some of the men bet Connie a nice bit of money that he doesn't have the nerve to visit Pinto's grave. They say he's too scared to do it. You know, and Connie, well, of course, he's highly insulted by this. He's offended, and he accepts their dare. So the only stipulation is that he has to prove that he was actually there by plunging a Bowie knife into the grave so they can all see it in the morning. They take the bartender's Bowie knife, and Connie goes there, and he very... I couldn't have done it, but I know he'd be very steadily and very nervously walks up to the grave, and he gets on his knees, he plunges the knife into the grave, and then as he rises, he feels something pull him down. So the men, they find Connie's dead body beside the grave the next morning, and one of the men gives what he believes to be a rational explanation. The wind blew Connie's cloak over the grave, and when he stuck the knife into the ground, he stuck it through his cloak by accident. And then when
Let me help you with that explanation there, okay?
Okay,
this is
sure.
A great deducting reasoning between them all in the grave there.
I knowed it! I got a man killed!
Cut it out, Johnny Rob. You're acting like a baby.
It's not your fault, boy.
What do you mean?
What happened? Whole story's right there. Look at him. He came up here. He had more courage than I thought. There's his knee prints. He knelt by the grave. He pulled his knife from his belt and plunged it into the grave. But the wind was strong and it blew his coattail over the grave. Being dark, he didn't notice. He put his knife through his own coattail, pinioning it to the grave. Then he started to rise. As he did so, perhaps he was halfway up, he felt a sudden tug, the knife holding his coattail. But in his own mind, Pinto reached out and grabbed him. He was already scared half to death, and that finished him. His heart gave way, that's all.
There you are, bud. So you think Connie's death was an accident? That he stuck the knife in his own coattail?
Yes, ma'am.
How did his coattail get over the grave?
For some reason or other, he had it unbuttoned. The wind must have done the rest.
What direction was the wind from last night?
The south. Why?
The south. Same as now. Look at my cloak. I'm standing in the same spot Connie was. Look at my cloak. Is the wind blowing it across the grave?
Angela Lansbury couldn't have done that better herself.
Yes, and then she breaks into her demented laughter, of course. She breaks into the demented laughter. Yes, and that was an excellent part of the episode, yes, that scene. You know, yes, is my coat flying over the grave? Yes, the very demented laughter. You got to love it. But... Yes, thank you for that. I appreciate you putting that in there. Yes, because, you know, that's what they thought. You know, oh, it's no big deal. He was ready to have a heart attack anyway and scared the hell out of him. And he went to get up, and that was it. But, to me, The Grave is an episode that I think definitely would have worked better as an hour-long episode. And I don't know. To me, it needed more substance. In order to be fully appreciated, it's just
fleshed out.
Yeah, definitely. Just what was it that made Pinto Sykes such a town terror? I mean, why did he keep getting away from Connie? Why couldn't Connie get these guys? Just stood there, waited for him to walk out, and shot him. Now you're going to tell me Connie's been chasing him all over creation for God knows how long, and all they had to do will stand behind a few barrels and behind a few doors, and he walks out, and boom, he's shot. Okay, so you got to wonder, why was it so easy for them to get him, but Connie couldn't do it? You, Robert, you asked in your review why he only had...
Yeah, lots of questions.
But you asked why he had a vendetta against Connie and not the actual killer.
The whole town, right.
Yeah.
Why not
the whole town.
Curse the whole town? Why just the guy that's trying to hunt you down? You know, it's kind of ridiculous, to be honest about it. And why even pay the money out to something that's not even done? If I was him, I would have been pretty peed off about not getting paid in the first place. Instead of $40 to go up there and stick a knife up in the grave.
Exactly. And the whole town wanted him dead. They all wanted him dead. So why wasn't Pinto against the whole town? They may have hired Connie. First of all, Connie was the one chasing him. I understand that. But the whole town hired Connie. So obviously the whole town hated Pinto. They all wanted him dead. So why only the vendetta against Connie? And you asked a good question there. And also, it wasn't Connie who killed him. The townsfolk killed him. Why not hate them? Why not say, well, the guy who put the bullet in me, he comes up to my grave, I'm going to pull him down. You know, I'm going to get him. I'm going to kill him. Why Connie? Connie didn't kill him. Connie chased him, but he didn't kill him. So that kind of makes no sense to me. I mean, really, it doesn't. And if he hated Connie for trying to hunt him down, he should have hated his murderers more, don't you think?
Exactly.
Robert, I mean, don't you think? And also, I also thought it was a bit strange as the town, you know, the town's going to pay Connie to find and kill Pinto. So they didn't really seem to be rolling in dough, did they? I mean, Johnny Robbie says, oh, look, I got a $20 gold piece here. Took me 20 weeks to save it. Well, these guys were not, and then the other guy's like, well, I can't bet you, Connie, because, you know, I don't have much money. And, these guys are all so broke, they have very little money, but yet they're able to pay him to kill the guy. Where are they getting the money from? They're all broke.
Yeah. That's not quite right. Lee Van Cleef's character had won the money off the guy, said he had no money left.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, guys are all paying them for what, you know? I mean, I don't know where they're getting all this money.
It's not a Mexican town like in Magnificent Seven where everybody had the farmers had to put up all their stuff just to hire them.
Exactly, exactly. So in this house, people were supposedly paying Connie, but I'd like to know if he did kill Pinto, who was going to pay him and where they were going to come up with the money. I don't get it.
Most of the bounty hunters got the money before they even did anything.
You mean the bounty hunters were
paid? They already paid them, yes. That's why they were all broke.
So you think Connie had been paid ahead of time?
Yeah, they would. They wouldn't take a job unless they got paid.
Oh, so
he had a purse full of money, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, remember he threw the $20 up to match Johnny Robb when Johnny Robb said, I'll bet you 20. That's true.
Well,
so
sometimes they do half and half, too. They'll give you half up front, doing the job and half to
back then
after
they
it's
wouldn't
done.
Do that. Nope.
Yeah, but,
I don't know. I've seen some movies where it's been done. Even mobster movies, they do that.
Those are movies.
But wait a minute.
Well, I'm not talking about real life. I'm talking about movies. Maybe realize, they did.
If you pay the guy up front, the whole thing, like suppose you say, I'm just talking random, okay, you say $10,000 to kill John Doe, okay, and you give him the $10,000, you give it to him right up front, and he's got to kill John Doe. What happens if he doesn't kill John Doe? Just in this case, if they had paid $1,000 to Connie to kill Pinto. Well, he didn't kill him, did he? The townspeople killed him. Does he? So I didn't see anybody asking for their money back, but they should have, I guess.
Well, they used that to bury him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of weird there. And
well, even lawmen with their bounty, you know, for criminals wanted, they don't pay till they're actually, you know, brought to the jail or they're dead. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I don't know. It's kind of strange. I thought it was kind of strange there. But, you know, also, You know, I wondered about his sister's story. I mean, you know, Ione, I mean, she was a bit off. that girl was a little bit off. I mean, there were a lot of unanswered questions and unexplained backgrounds. Like, obviously, Felix here. Felix said this episode scared him as a child, and even though nothing was seen, just the creepy suspense got to him. Well, I agree. This could be a scary episode, because he said he wanted to know more about the dead man. You knew nothing. You knew nothing about Pinto Sykes. We don't know why he was, you know, being hunted down. We don't. Did he kill, 20 women and children? What did he do? You know, so you don't really have any feeling that, okay, Connie, you know, you got to kill this guy, or the townsfolk's got to kill this guy because he's the most horrible person in the world. You don't know anything about him. And you don't know anything about Ione, his sister. But I will say that in Bobby's review, he's right. Bobby's right about the atmosphere. You know, the episode was dark and eerie, and even the townsfolk, they were kind of creepy. You know, when Connie was walking up to the grave in the dark, and the total silence was broken by that door banging in the wind, that I have to admit, that made me jump. I absolutely jumped when that door banged. I don't know, but in the beginning of the episode, I thought there was too much jacking, and nothing really happens until the last 5 minutes. And even then, I didn't think it was that thrilling. But, you know, I will admit the atmosphere was good, and I would have liked to have known a little bit more background. I mean, Ione's sister, she was like, really out there. Maybe it was because her brother was killed, but she seemed like she was out there before that. And, of course, Lee Marvin, he's a terrific actor. He was good in this role. And luckily, he went on to much bigger and better roles as time went on. But, of course, he did do another Zone episode in the fifth season when he starred in the episode Steel. And, of course, James Best, he's right at home in Westerns. He starred in 3 Zone episodes. Yeah, he was... Well, Johnny Rob. James, I'm not a big fan of James Best. I'll tell you that right now. I'm not a big fan. He was in a lot of Westerns, and he was in 3 episodes, but I'm not a big fan of James Best. I got to be honest with you. He did his roles, I guess, the way he was supposed to be. It drove me crazy.
He's played on the Andy Griffith Show. He made appearances on there. He's made appearances all around.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the one who could play the guitar, remember? Yelling Andy Griffith. Yeah, he was the guy who had singing and guitar picking. You know, according to Andy, he could play and sing, and you know, they wanted to make him into something. Yeah, I have nothing really against him. I'm just not a big fan. I mean, I don't think he's that great of an actor. He's okay, but he was in 3 episodes, and well, of course, Strother Martin, Lee Van Cleef, they were always very fine actors. I have nothing against them. But, I don't know, it's just a lackluster episode. Considering all that talent, it was lackluster. The idea was interesting, but a little more story was needed, which couldn't be provided in a half an hour. And, oh, by the way, a little side note. Lee Marvin, he was a serious alcoholic, and he delayed the shooting of this episode a couple of times. And George Clemens, he was the director of photography. He wanted Lee Marvin fired. He wanted him fired from the episode. And Buck Houghton, who was not the director of this episode, but he was there, he said, no, give him a chance, you know, give him some time. And he talked to him. And Lee Marvin ended up apologizing to everyone on the set for his behavior, because he was drinking a lot, and he was screwing up a lot of the takes and a lot of the production time. But he did apologize, and it turned out okay. So he did a fine job after that. And, of course, the last thing I wanted to mention is that fan that was used to blow the wind in all the scenes, especially the final scenes. It was so loud that the actors' voices, they could barely be heard above all the fans, you know, blowing all over the place. So the dialogue had to be recorded and dubbed in later. And that's the way director Montgomery Pittman was the director. And that's the way he wanted it. So that's the way they did it. So my rating is a 2 for average on this episode. It's not terrible, but it's not great either. It's the beginning moved along too slowly, but other than that, I'll give it a 2 for average. And now I'm going to turn this over to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I think me and you were both in agreement because I got both our reviews here, and I've been looking at them over while we've been talking. And we're very much of one mind on this episode. You know, usually we don't get in advance of what, you know, other reviews are. And it was very surprising when I read, you know, yours and mine and others as well, that yours and mine seemed to be on the same level, because we had the same questions.
Right.
And, you know, that we just brought up and discussed. And it was very much like you're starting in the middle of a picture. It's like you're missing the beginning. Even though you've seen the beginning where Panda Sykes gets gunned down by the townspeople, with here again, why hire gunmen if you finally get the nerve up, finally gun them down? Where's the background? There's no background. There's no flashbacks. There's nothing to explain anything. It's like you're starting in the middle of a movie. You got the middle and the end with this episode. And that's what I like to see, at least some flashbacks. And I do agree with Lynn, because it really needed to be fleshed out. I mean, and as Bobby said about the atmosphere, it was there for this, very much a supernatural feel to the story. But unfortunately, it falls a little bit of flat. I mentioned in my review about the final scene, Bette, that goes up there. Now, see, it doesn't tell you, and we are assuming that he did get paid before going after Pinto. The way I stated it, because it wasn't said that he got paid or showed or anything, you're assuming that he did, that all he's going to get is $40 out of the whole deal for going up into the grave and sticking a knife in there.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a loss for him, but
$40 back then was this week's salary. So I'll take $40 if I can live off of it for a week. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, because they said, well, as Lynn mentioned, 20 weeks. It's, he said in there, to save up, and that's 5 months. What I said earlier, 5 months. So yeah, definitely, because when you work for somebody, you only got what was it, like 10 cents an hour or something like that.
Do they ever tell you how? I don't know if I missed it or what, but do they tell you how long he's been chasing him? Do they tell you how long Connie has been chasing Pinto? And it seems like a long time.
Not unless it was during the info dump there at the bar where they're sitting around and talking about the whole situation. It might have been mentioning that, and I don't remember. But that was kind of the info dump right there. We probably, you know, everybody's telling the story there in the bar of what's going on. Connie a little bit about it.
Yeah, I got impression that maybe it was months.
It could have been. Yeah, he could have been searching them to finally, he got word. And, you know, you got to remember then, you know, a lot of things were Pony Express and word by mouth. You know, from other people, from other towns, what happened. Connie was probably in a town where someone mentioned, did you hear about Pinto Sykes being gunned down? And then probably coming back that way.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, like I said, I did agree with you that, you know, they need a little more background and flashbacks of why Pinto was harassing the town and being such a menace. Instead, we get the info dump from the townspeople, which, you know, what I just said. There was just too much talk. And I'm reading from my review here. Too much talk and not enough action. Only having 22 minutes to tell the story does not help. Or for primo actors such as Sterling Martin, James Best, Lee Marvin, and Levon Cleef, or early Western actors were wasted. So you can see in the review how we and Lynn kind of agree on this episode.
Definitely.
One of the things that I was thinking about when, and I didn't put this in the review, was how very similar this is to another Western. And a lot of us know Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood was in, you know, the 90s or so, trying to bring back the Westerns. And this was one of his early ones during the time, you know, the spaghetti Westerns and stuff like that. There was a movie that if you had a template of the grave and you would insert the grave on top of this movie that Eastwood did, it is very similar, called High Plains Drifter. And if you about that movie, there is elements in that movie that is very similar to The Grave. So let me go ahead and play the trailer.
A drifter came riding out of the West. You know him as Clint Eastwood. The citizens of Largo didn't know him at all.
What did you say your name was again? I didn't.
Fear was in their greeting. Murder was in their minds.
We're talking about hiring a gunfighter.
Yeah, we don't know anything about that fella there. Now, who is he? Where's he come from?
You don't want to get shot. You don't want your shops or your houses burned. You don't want your women touched. You don't want anything to happen. Except you're afraid to do anything about it.
That stranger's got everybody in this town at each other's throats.
One man against one town. Not bad odds.
About time this town has a new sheriff.
I'm the sheriff.
And the mayor.
I'm the mayor.
Any objections?
No. Shut my ear off! I'll kill every man in Largo!
You know what you are. You're an animal.
Well, you have a way of bringing that out.
Drifted into town. Now they'll never forget him.
Who are you?
Very great movie. One of my favorites is High Plains Drift, especially the part where
movie.
Town red. Yeah, it's going to look like hell.
That is a good movie. It really is.
But
awesome
it is
movie.
Very, very similar to The Grave,
yeah.
Because you got the stranger coming in there, you got the townspeople, they hire him, but in the end, they're the ones that help, but
absolutely.
They don't get it done, and it ends up Eastwood's character. But very, I think Eastwood had in mind that he wanted to do kind of a supernatural feel to this movie. And the ending kind of, because you don't know what the man, you never hear his name through the entire thing, but at the end, you get this.
I'm just about done here. I never did know your name.
Yes, you do. Take care.
Yes, sir, Captain.
He rides out and disappears. And then what it is the little person or the midget, however we want to call him, in that movie, which the stranger really liked. And he was at the gravesite fixing the grave of the marshal of the town. And then at the end, it reveals the name of the marshal of the town. So in other words, Eastwood was trying to say the guy that came back of no name was actually his spirit or sonification of the marshal of that town is basically how they were trying to explain that. But yeah, it's a good movie.
No, it is a good movie. Felix said he liked it too. Felix liked that movie too.
Yeah, very similar to The Grave. It's like if you put The Grave on top of this movie, it's very much a blueprint of what they did. But
yeah,
I gave us a 2 out of 5 as well. So we were on the same, even the same rating. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to pass this on to Bobby. Bobby?
Well, admittedly, this is a terrific episode, actually, for radio, not for TV, because television is a visual medium, and this story doesn't even belong there. There's nothing really to look at, and I have to agree with Bobby Neer's usual brilliant analysis that the sets were very memorable. Unfortunately, fancy, impressive painted backdrops and wind machines do not necessarily make for a classic episode. It's fun to look at it for a couple of minutes, but then you find yourself, it's a little like having salad for dinner and not having any dinner afterwards. You're still hungry somehow. And so we see this week after week after week in The Twilight Zone, and that really undercuts the series. We saw it on our last show with the mirror. It was the same thing there, not really showing how bad the dictator was, just showing what happened later on as he went crazy. And I don't get, it doesn't do much for me. Now, you know, we've had several bad stories in a row now. And I know we have a good one coming up next and several good ones still ahead of us in the month or two ahead. But I was a very young kid when this series was on. And, of course, I was crazy about it. But I wonder if today I was looking at it for the first time, if I would have the patience to sit through some of these bad stories week after week without actually leaving the series and going somewhere else. There's so much variety on TV now compared to back then. And this does not serve this series well. I there's nothing for me to say about it other than to repeat what other people have already said, which is that it's just a lot of talk, and it's this endless business about describing what happened rather than showing what happened. Now, what's at work here, I don't know. I mean, it's well known that CBS was always on Rod Serling's back about keeping the production costs down, and that may be part of why in a lot of episodes you just don't get to see anything happen. You just have characters standing around talking about what happened. That's a lot cheaper to film than it is to film gunfights or anything like that. So once again, we're talking about a character we don't know. We only know hearsay about how bad he was and how he terrorized the town, and they finally went to get him. And it would have been a lot more exciting, I'm sure. I haven't seen High Plains Drifter in many, many years, but it was a lot more exciting in that movie than it was here, because Clint Eastwood always showed things and just talk about. So sometimes I feel in this series like I'm being talked to death, and it really, really does turn me off. And it's a mundane episode because there's nothing new. I mean, this is a tried and true old plot in countless numbers of Westerns where a gunfighter terrorizes the town, and it just goes on and on and on. But it's less interesting here because I don't get to see him really terrorize the town. It just isn't. It's just boring. It really is boring, to be honest.
So, Bobby, did you feel it just started in the middle and you're just missing the whole?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Of course, it starts in the middle, because if you got people telling you what happened, you're starting in the middle. Oh, by the way, before you got here, this is what happened. Well, thanks a lot, but I have eyes, thank goodness. I'd like to see it if you don't mind.
It would have been nice to have some background to know what this horrible man did. You know, everybody's out to get Pinto Sykes. Okay, fine. Well, maybe he was a creep, but maybe he was a horrible person. But why? What did he do? Did he rob a bank?
Well,
did he rape women? Did he kill children? What did he do?
I get very tired of this old excuse, and I've used it too many times myself, that they only have 22 or 23 or 24, whatever minutes it was after commercials, to tell a story, so there wasn't any time. Well, the Twilight Zone went to an hour-long format later on, as we all know, and I absolutely hate that. And when they had an hour, they still didn't do anything except pad it out to last an hour. So, you have to show something to really make it. I don't need endless action. I like to use my imagination, too. But, you know, just I'm so tired of the talk. Sometimes I think in this while, I can't keep my eyes open because I think to myself, just stop talking already and get on with it. Now, admittedly, there are some stories in the Twilight Zone that have such surprise endings that you're just it doesn't matter how much talk there is. I mean, look at an episode of Eye of the Beholder. I mean, it's just a woman laying in a hospital bed and whining and carrying on about how ugly she is. We could look at that and say, how long do I have to hear her whine about this? But the ending is so spectacularly shocking and unexpected that it doesn't matter. So in this story, it's all very nice that he goes to the graveyard and it's creepy and scary and all of that, but it's a terrible letdown. Other people have said in their reviews the same thing I'm saying right now, that it's just a terrible letdown. There's just nothing much there. And I still don't quite understand exactly how he died, just because he turned around and a knife was in his coat there, unless he had a heart attack or something, and that's how he died, because there wasn't enough happening there, you know, to cause him to expire.
He hit his head on rock or something is what I was thinking.
Well,
if
it showed that, I should have missed it.
If you really pay attention and really watch closely when that happens, okay, he sticks the knife in, he goes to stand up, and he almost does a little spin. There's almost like a little half spin where he falls back down. And it's like, okay, you're doing this little half spin. So this little half spin, either they were right that he stuck it in his coat and they pulled him back down, or he saw a little half spin because Pinto reached up and grabbed his arm. So you really don't know.
Okay,
you know,
well, then I would have preferred to see Pinto reach up out of the grave and grab his arm. This is the Twilight Zone, okay?
But you really can't tell if it was just a matter of he stood up and his coat got caught and he did a little half spin, or the half spin's close to somebody grabs his arm. You know, so you have no idea how that actually happened.
Or twisted his neck when he fell.
Yeah. Or what?
Twisted his neck, you know.
That's true.
Well, show it to me, okay? You really have to try hard to have this many character actors and do nothing with them. That's pretty shocking. And, I mean, you got four people who were known as character actors in their time, and all you do is have them say, not talk to each other. You've got to be kidding me. And, yes, Lee Marvin is good for what he's done, but, you know, I thought he was better in Cat Ballou than he was here. this is one I try to avoid when it's on TV. I wouldn't sit through it unless I actually had to, like I did last night when I watched it with Lynn. It's just the same old thing. Just give me something to watch and something to latch on to. I gave it a 1.5. I gave it points just for the atmosphere, which I don't normally do. It's probably worth less than that. I can't give it a 2 for average because I think Twilight Zone average is better than this.
I did think the atmosphere was good. Hey, I have a question, though. Whoever came up with the name Mothershed? Who in God's name comes up with it? I'm sure there are people with that name out there, but who and why would somebody come up with the name Mothershed for somebody? That blew me away. That this guy's last name was Mothershed. And when I was very young and first watching this episode for the first time, and that was many, many, many years ago, you know, I was like, Mothershed. Mothershed? What is that? You know, what kind of last name is that? But I think there are people with that last name, but it's few and far between. Weird choice for a last name for a character.
Or an immigrant type name, something like that, maybe.
Or maybe somebody involved with the show had somebody, you know, because I can't imagine somebody just says, oh, well, let's name this character Mothershed. I mean, there's got to be some reason for that. I'm wondering if somebody in the show, you know, had a relative with that last name. It's very strange choice.
In conclusion, just let me say this. At the end of my review, I said it would have been interesting if Rod Serling had just come out of the shadows and told the story himself. And Robert just played the clips of it, as he does on every show. And there are certain stories, and this is one of them, that are more interesting listening to the clips on the Internet or on the radio, if it were, than it is to actually watch it. I got more out of the clip Robert played than I did out of actually watching it. Because it allows you to use your imagination a little bit, and which is a little more exciting. So, I'm old enough to have still been around when I was a very, very small child when there were still dramas on the radio. And this would have been a good one because you really can imagine what it's like, and you don't expect to hear a lot of gunfire or to see a lot of stuff. You have to think about it first. But this is TV and not radio, and so I can't give them a pass on this. There will be, unfortunately, other episodes coming up in the future that suffer from the same thing. And I just wish I could get a real clue as to why this is. I have a feeling that, because I've read it so many times, that this business about cutting production costs in a lousy half-hour series has something to do with it. There's a lot of stuff that does not happen in this series, probably because there just wasn't money to do it. And that is very regrettable because there are some good stories that should have been flagged. Lynn said, flesh this out to an hour. Please don't do that unless you're going to give me background. If you really want to flesh it out to an hour and you really want to do that, you're going to have to show how bad this guy really was.
Like,
you're going to have to show a lot of things.
But that was my point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You've got to give me
something. An hour to give me some background.
Yeah, but I have a feeling if they did another hour, they'd just keep talking. That's what's really scary about
possibly,
it.
Possibly, yeah.
All right, I gave it a 1.5, and that's. I'll stay right there. I'll give the little credit for looking good, but other than that, not much. Okay, Lynn, back to you.
Okay, Dave.
Okay, well, I enjoyed it, actually, probably more when I think about it, for seeing such fairly stellar cast, really, in one episode. I mean, usually when we watch a Twilight episode, there's one well-known name that we pick out. But here, to me, there was a caucus of good cowboy actors. This episode... it was episode 72, aired 27th of October 1961. Just 3 days later, in the cinemas, a big cowboy film called The Comancheros with John Wayne came out. Lee Marvin was in that. Just 5 or 6 months later, which means they were probably filming it just after this episode, came out another John Wayne and who's the one there? John Wayne and I'll get the other name in a minute. But Who Shot Liberty Valance?
Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart. Now, with Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne, Lee Marvin was in Who Shot Liberty Valance. Lee Van Cleef was in Who Shot Liberty Valance, and Struther Martin was in Who Shot Liberty Valance. So three of them here were in, you know, one of the big westerns of the time. To me, it was nice to see them together. I mean, I take on board what Bobby said, that you didn't actually see them do much. I thought, like the part where Lee Marvin is in the graveyard, however, I mean, he really showed himself to be a sharpshooter. He certainly seemed to be able to pull that gun out pretty quickly and be prepared to fire. I had a few issues with it. I thought the graveyard looked a little bit like something out of a Charles Dickens thing. It didn't look like a Boot Hill sort of graveyard at all. It made it very spooky with trees and all sorts of things. Bobby said we've had a run of poor episodes. Well, this episode 72 was previously the 69, 70, and 71 all also dealing with death. So we had a run of four episodes all dealing with death. I agree with you, Lennox, about the chap who played the James Best, not particularly one of my favourite actors. The first thing I remember seeing him in, I suppose, was playing the sheriff Roscoe P. Coltrane in Dukes of Hazzard.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and of course the other chap that was in there at Stratford Rep was the Chief O'Hara in the Batman series. I mean, we really had a cast that really went on to do things. Apparently, Lee Van Cleef had had an accident in 1958. His career was really on an upward trend, but he dropped out of acting for a bit, and this was on his way back up before he actually again got on to The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and then his career revived quite a lot when he got into some of the spaghetti westerns.
So, well, I believe James Best is still alive. I think I looked him up about a month or two ago. He's in his early 80s. So he's still
85.
Alive and he's still doing stuff, yeah.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Lee Marvin died. We were talking about David Jones and the Monkees. He died age 73, and Lee Van Cleef died when he was age 64. So, I mean, really sad that these people died so young. And Struther Martin, the other thing he was in was in Cool Hand Luke. He played the merciless prison officer in that. He died age 61. He actually died. That can't be right. It says on his page he died first of August 19, age 61. So,
they all died so young.
But anyway, getting back to the story, because that's what we're really supposed to be talking about. I didn't think the girl was very good. I know she was portraying to have the element of not witchcraft, but a little bit of spirituality about her, I suppose. But the Ellen Winward, or whatever she was called, didn't think particularly she was convincing. But a few other things just to stir the pot up with you guys. I think what could have happened, and another possibility, was that when he goes to the grave and he plunges the knife into the grave the first time, he looks at the knife. The knife has just hit dirt. Remember, this man had only just been shot recently. He was expecting the knife, when he plunged it into the thing, you know, to hit his leg or his body and actually be maybe dry blood on the knife edge. So the second time he was doing it more viciously, because he sort of, I think he wanted to check whether there was a body buried at all. Secondly, the girl comes into the bar, she buys a bottle of a very strong drink, and they say, oh, your father's drinking a lot. She says, oh, no, it's for me. But where does she take it? She takes it to the graveyard, because she's gone off to the graveyard. She's only leaving the graveyard when the you know, the Lee Marvin character goes there. I think
they're probably
the idea
close
of that,
to each other.
Not, I think the idea of that is to leave within the bounds of possibility that the outlaw isn't actually dead. That when Lee Van Cleef plunges his knife into the grave, there isn't a body there. She's gone up to the grave because he's hiding out in the grave, and she's taking him up that drink to keep him going. She's taking the plate out. She says she's taking the plate. Why is she taking the plate? Perhaps she's taking the plate because she's taking him some food earlier in the night, and so he can eat off it. Maybe there's another theory that the actual criminal wasn't killed, and that was one of the reasons why they didn't show that at the beginning, because we have no way of absolutely knowing for sure, you know, that he did actually die. Yeah. So just another thought.
That's really good, Dave. I never even thought of that. That is really good.
Well, it
that
certainly
is too far-fetched. There's no way in the world the writer intended that.
No, I think they're leaving it open to interpretation. I'm not saying that he wasn't dead, but why did... if you looked at the expression as he plunged the knife in the first time, he definitely looks at the knife to... Well, it's just hit dirt. It's not hit a body. It's just hit dirt. And that's why he plunged it more viciously towards the heart region the second time. Why is the girl who doesn't drink... Why did she buy the drink and then take it up to the grave? All right, you could argue she's gone up there to mourn, but she could also have gone up there. Anybody remember Great Expectations? David Copperfield, young lad goes out and he's just looking at the gravestone, and then the prisoner that's gone off one of the prison ships jumps from behind the gravestones and frightens the young lad, and the young lad has to go and get him a bottle of booze and the pork pie they've been saving for Christmas. As there's a big hunt out on the moors for the criminal, and that's the start of the story of Great Expectations. So I'm wondering whether there was at least an element of leaving that possible theory out there in the open as to another possible thinking of the outcome. So I just thought I'd throw that in there, see if anybody thought that might be interesting. But I must admit...
That is interesting, though. That is interesting, to think possibly he's not dead, yeah.
Yeah, I would say as an episode, it's only a two, but on a historic basis of seeing some of these people doing their early work, even though it was sort of very pedestrian and plodding and so on, they weren't really in any action... I thought that was good. The other thing is, by the way, I did think at least that bar looked like it was in the Old West. You know, you go in some of them, they've got bloody chandeliers, and they've got girls wearing, you know, dresses, silk dresses from Paris, and they've imported a piano that's come across the blooming desert. I mean, this was really, you know, two boards on top of barrels, and it was a real old dump of a place. As to that money, I think that bet was a substantial bet. As far as I remember from seeing old cowboy films, the basic, you know, cowhand, his wage was $1 a day and all found. You know, he got to sleep in the rack, got all his food, and $1 a day. And maybe the, you know, one of the higher ups, you know, not just the basic ones we get, you know, $2 or $3 a week. Maybe the top hand would get $5 a day, but $20 would be a substantial amount. The one that said he had no money had already said he'd lost it to the gambler, which of course was why just those two could offer to cover the bet. And again, the gunfighter had that pouch of money, so I think that does support what Rick Wall was saying, that he probably had got paid up front and he had that purse already to hand. So I would say 2 for the episode, but 3 in terms of its interest value to people checking, you know, early careers of...
Yeah.
I mean, to get that, that's quite a high-quality cast are going on to be a high-quality cast.
Oh, absolutely. That was a that was a great cast, yeah.
Okay. So I think I'm done there. I thought it was... better than some of the ones we've talked about recently, anyway.
Okay. And Rick, what do you have to offer on this? Rick?
I put him to sleep.
Rick, did you go to sleep on us? Oh, my goodness. Rick went to sleep.
Put that bottle of rye down.
What's that?
I told him to put that bottle of rye whiskey down.
He must have. Rick. Oh, jeez. He only shows up every 4 shows, and then when he comes, he falls asleep. Oh, Rick. All right. Well, unless he wakes up within the next few minutes.
He's probably off doing something, so he's probably just...
He's probably have to take the hellhound out.
Maybe he went to the bathroom and he'll be right back.
Yeah, so I talked. There was nothing to stay awake for.
Oh, wait a minute. He just hung up.
He might be out.
Perhaps he's
going to
try and
problem.
Call in then.
Yeah, well, we'll give him a few seconds.
So, does anybody else give credence to that idea that the actual outlaw might not be buried?
Well,
no.
I think that's
too much thinking. I don't think they were thinking that much, like Bobby said. It was just a story.
But I do think it's an interesting together. Idea. I agree. I agree, but I think it's an interesting idea. I like that idea that, you know, possibly. No, I don't. Again, I agree with them. It probably was not the idea in the writer's mind that he would still be alive. But I do like the idea. I think that's a great idea to, you know, imagine that maybe he just faked his death.
Yeah, I don't think that was
the solution.
So
turn around and kill the people in town. Yeah,
but I think it's always to leave it as a mystery. The fact that they're, you know, it was either, you know, hauled down into the grave by a dead man. He died of fright. Or he died because the man wasn't dead. So, I mean, that gives you three alternatives. And you can come away whichever one you believe.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's up to your imagination what you think, you know, is the best ending for that. And feel
no,
like...
Rick Wall, we can't hear you. Rick Wall's put something in text.
No.
Obviously, you're not on the phone now. But we couldn't hear you.
Yeah, Felix said the dead man grabbed him. Well, yeah, I think you're probably right. No, Rick, we can't hear you. Oh, I feel so bad. Did he try again? No. Oh, I'm sorry, Rick. Oh, gosh.
Rick, talk your rating in if you can.
Damn Skype. No, damn Skype. And yeah, damn Skype, because Skype, I have problems with Skype, too, so I know how he feels, I think. Well, what is our next show?
Yeah, sometimes it has a problem.
No, I know. Skype, oh my God, I had all kinds of problems. They finally stopped doing that magic that Jack thing. Like,
oh, yeah. 2.5 is giving it anyway. He's put his rating in.
2.5 for Rick. Thank you, Rick. I'm so sorry that you're not able to talk to us. Just looking forward to that. But, you know, I know Skype's been terrible. And they finally stopped that magic that Jack thing that was going on for the longest time. I mean, that was driving me crazy. But what do we have? The 17th is our next show. St. Patty's Day.
You're a bad man. You're a very bad man.
Oh, the good old luck of the Irish day. There we go. So, and we are going to be doing It's a Good Life.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Next week, we borrow from the exceptional talent of author Jerome Bixby. It's an adaptation of what has been called one of the most terrifying modern fantasies ever written. What you'll see is, in a sense, a portrait of a monster as a young boy. Next week's very special excursion into the Twilight Zone is called It's a Good Life. I hope we see you then.
Hooray!
Yay! It's a Good Life. With that wonderful, terrific...
And I promise I'll have that 2-minute introduction ready for everybody so everybody can get a snack and a drink and a sandwich.
Right. And Felix said he's going to be drinking his Irish coffee during the show. You drink your Irish coffee, Felix, and I'll drink some Irish whiskey, and we'll be all ready to go.
Well, I'll try and find some Guinness then.
And some Guinness. Yeah, some Guinness. Irish whiskey, Guinness. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're good on that. We're good on all that.
I'll try to see if I can get me an Irish red. What's that one beer? That's Killian,
right?
Yeah, I'll give me a Killian that day.
Killian, that's right. Yeah. So we got plenty of stuff we can drink that day. And Life of O'Reilly, says Felix. Yes, and we are going to be watching that cuddly, adorable little urchin, Bill Mummy. Little Billy Mummy, that little adorable freckle face, little, you know what? I'd like to just take that look. I mean, he's such a sweet little thing, but I'd like to grab. And he's just an adorable if I could just. But anyway, yes, that's a wonderful episode, and we'll be doing that on Saturday, March 17th, St. Patty's Day. So, yeah. I'm. Yay, and I'm just so, so sorry that Rick wasn't there. Rick, please, please, please try to be back here on the 17th. Maybe Skype will work better. Besides, it's a better episode anyway on the 17th. So try to get back in on March 17th and join us for It's a Good Life. And, of course, I'm hoping that – and, oh, Dave just gave the birth date of Mr. William. Oh, I didn't know Billy Mummy's real name was Charles William Mummy. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he's 5 years older than me. Okay. And Rick's going to a parade, and everybody – well – all right. So everybody have a wonderful weekend, rest of the weekend, and I'll see you 2 weeks from now, everybody, I hope. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Adios, amigos.
And before I play the Twilight Zone outro, I thought we'd do a little treat here. And we all know William Shatner. He played a couple of Twilight Zone episodes. But what we don't know, or what we may know, was... William Shatner also does some music, and more than singing, he actually talks the song out. And
oh, yeah.
His
yeah.
latest one he did was the Golden Earring Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
So on our way out, before the intro, we'll play a little bit of that for you. Goodbye, everybody.
Somewhere in a lonely hotel room is a guy starting to realize that his eternal fate has turned its back on him, and it's 2 a.m. It's 2 a.m. The fear is gone. I'm sitting here, waiting, the gun's still warm. Maybe my connection is tired of taking chances. Yeah, there's a storm on the loose, sirens in my head. I'm wrapped up in silence, all circuits are dead. I cannot decode, my whole life spins into a frenzy. Help, I'm stepping into the Twilight Zone. The place is a madhouse, feels like being cloned. My beacon's been moved under moon and star. Where am I to go now that I've gone too far? Help, I'm stepping into the Twilight Zone. The place is a madhouse, feels like being cloned. My beacon's been moved under moon and star. Where am I to go now that I've gone too far?
Soon you will come to know
when the bullet hits the bone.
Soon you will come to know